You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities, solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us.
So the tool itself basically collects open source intelligence off the internet and puts together that in a way that is, with a bit of a risk rating, easy for the customers to see where they have some exposures.
That's Nathan Howe. He's Vice President of Emerging Technology at Zscaler. The research we're discussing today is titled Exposed. It looks at the risks corporate and cloud infrastructures face from expanded attack surfaces. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Importantly for the security professionals amongst us, this is only data collection and only visibility. It is not a penetration test. It is not sending any packets to any destination service. And what we're looking for is basically open listeners, anything the customers may have out there. So we pull in information from other sources to be able to provide that visibility. And that gives us a snapshot at that time as to what their customer is running on their infrastructure, exposed to the open internet. And when I say exposed, it means anybody, not just us, but anybody can see these services running on the internet.
Well, so in general, what did you find here? Is there broad exposure?
It's substantial. And both of this is interesting, but also not surprising at the same time. If you think about the idea in which industries have tried to deploy infrastructure to enable connectivity, they're either enabling connectivity for the consumers. So obviously you need to have a website. So those sort of things are somewhat accepted and expected. But then also, as we've gone through the last, especially the last 20 months or so, where we've had an increase of work from home, people have needed to provide or have more connectivity to their enterprises. So companies have delivered more and more mechanisms to connect people who were once not really remote workers into remote working, and therefore we've had to stand up equipment or infrastructure to enable this. So we have seen a substantial uptick of remote access services, whether it be VPNs or remote desktops and those sort of things.
Well, let's go through some of the findings here together. I mean, what were some of the key things that you all found in the research?
Yeah, a couple of really interesting things that really stood out. One is just the sheer amount of cloud services, as in AWS, Azure, hyperscaler type services that enterprises are utilizing. And that's not really a surprise if you think about the commoditization of IT, and especially how a large majority of companies out there really are not IT experts. So they're looking for a service. They pay for a service, get it online as quickly as possible. And those cloud services are providing the path of least resistance. So that's not a surprise. Mentioned before, the number of remote access services. We see a lot of those, specifically in relation to VPNs, remote access, desktops, and those things. But also, those seem to be in parallel to the level of attacks we've seen from the likes of the report from CSAIL back in October, talking about the top 25 attack vectors for nation state actors, and the top 9 were remote access services. So there's a correlation there of, well, more people working from home, more open gateways, more exposure.
Yeah, one of the things that caught my eye here was you tracked attack surfaces relative to the size of a particular company and got some interesting results here. Can you share with us what you found there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it goes by any surprise to anybody here that a large company has more IT and therefore more infrastructure on the internet, which is thus possibly available for attack for people. That's why we term it the attack surface. But what's interesting is that the larger a company is, the more they tend to have, and the reasons why. Now, I'm not going to draw any concrete reasons behind this, but when I've spoken to my customers, it's generally because it's been a large company tends to be diverse, and they may not have the governance to be able to control all entities that are standing up infrastructure. We have seen that some organizations are actually banning the use of credit card payments through finance, to services like AWS and Azure to stymie them, to stop these people in the company just going and buying a resource without going through the appropriate change procedures. But also we've seen it with customers who needed to go and deliver something very quickly. So we see that kind of speed that happens in the larger industries tends to be slowed down by change process. So they go outside the process and go and hire a third-party developer to spin up something. So that's why we see that enterprises in the larger space have this larger attack surface. And also they have more reliance on IT than the smaller companies who have perhaps less reliance on IT.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And so, I mean, do the larger companies then, as I would expect, you know, have greater resources to help protect themselves as well?
One would hope. There is definitely a shortage of IT security professionals in the industry, and we all know that and have seen that. So I guess that's also one reason why perhaps we're seeing a more of this exposure. But clearly, we'd like to see the larger organizations taking more responsibility for these things, and perhaps they are for core services. What tends to be the case is the idea of technical debt, things that get left behind or forgotten about and perhaps overlooked. And those in themselves, I can speak from personal experience in my life. In my previous job, when I used to work at Nestle, we saw this all the time. There was somebody who'd moved on and we'd forgotten about their infrastructure they ran. So it's the size of a company obviously is challenging, but also then that shortage of IT security professionals. And I guess the commoditization that anyone can spin up an IT service nowadays in the cloud with a credit card makes it challenging for enterprises to control.
Yeah, that is interesting. That whole notion of have, you know, almost, I mean, I can imagine an organization having someone whose responsibility is to kind of root out those forgotten things that have been spun up, like you say, you know, but it's so easy to overlook that.
Absolutely. And actually, interestingly enough, I had a customer last week who mentioned to me very concretely, I know more about the internet than I know about my internal network. And that's fascinating. But then when they double down on that, they explain that they know where YouTube is. It's advertised. They can look it up and find out where the servers are. They know where Facebook is. They know how to proxy that information if they want to put it through a security gateway. But their internal network, because it's just years and years and years of lack of inventory or of technical debt, there's so many things that are unknown. And there's so many parts of the infrastructure that work together in a way that have not been documented. So they're afraid to turn something off because who knows what the impact will be. So it's kind of the mindset of it's running, let it be, rather than rather than go and figure out what it is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You see those maybe apocryphal stories about people going through code and they find code that's commented that says, we have no idea what this does, but we're afraid to take it out.
Exactly. It's no different for corporate infrastructure either.
Right. Well, another area that you all dug into here was looking specifically at different geographies. Can you take us through what you found there and what that means?
Yeah, and that's actually a fun one. I've discussed a few times with my colleagues. So the largest region, like geographical region that we found with the most numbers of exposed services was the European and Middle East and Africa, so EMEA. And when we looked at this, we couldn't really draw any one reason behind this. But it actually was a colleague of mine. So I'm an Australian who lives in Germany, and I have a French colleague who pointed this out to me and said, well, Europe is diverse. There's the French team, there's the German team, there's the Austrian team, there's the Swedish team, and we all do things differently. And I thought about that, and that I'm not saying that's the correlative point, but it could be one of the causes that why EMEA has such a higher number compared to the APJ or American regions. It could also be that there is a more of a security focus in parts of the world like in the Americas, and also that APJ is perhaps one of the areas where we perform maybe less scans and haven't got the right number to kind of equalize the base vision there. But I do enjoy the idea of thinking about that EMEA probably has a diversity of organizations and different teams and different ways of working, which is the charm of Europe, of course, but also then clearly could be a security risk as well.
Yeah, that's fascinating that perhaps there's an additional translation layer at play there that could either slow things down or be an impediment.
Absolutely. I mean, writing a application for the German market isn't going to translate into the French one, even though it's 100 kilometers away from each other in certain parts of the countries, right? So it's the geography does actually play into it, and you have to consider how you're going to get the people to consume those applications at the same time, host them, and maybe do you do them differently for different regions? So yeah, that is certainly a challenge, I'm sure, that most of the big enterprises have to face.
Yeah. Another thing that you all dug into here was looking at attack services industry by industry, and some interesting data you gathered here. What caught your eye?
Two main ones that I think are actually really interesting, and they certainly have the highest numbers in, if you look at them from an overall scale, but telecommunications had the highest, or so telecommunication industry had the highest level of high risk vulnerabilities or high risk services online. And that's not really a surprise, given that telecommunications companies need to provide backwards compatible functionality for all sorts of technology out there. Whether it be someone running an old version of a web browser, or whether it be some old version of a mail client that they have to support for some contractual obligation they have as a managed service provider. I don't know. Any of these things certainly pop up as challenges for telecommunications providers. But the other industry that really took me back was actually when I saw that the food service, the hospitality industry, was one of the largest that had exposed services online, and it's specifically around the public cloud. And again, this comes back to the point I mentioned a bit earlier, Dave, was we have infrastructure that, or we have companies that are not IT specialists. They need to get infrastructure or service running. And specifically within the last 18 months or so with the pandemic, companies that had to adapt from being face-to-face service to now I need to scan a QR code to be able to transact with you to then send you the food, they've had to rethink the way in which they've done that. So there's no doubt been a creation and establishment of new infrastructure, most likely in cloud providers. In addition, like I look at that from my background from Nestle, and they're a food service company. They're just going to go and get food made. IT is part of is kind of a service, much like water or electricity. It's part of the product, but it's not the key product. And so it's not as the biggest focal point as it would be for an IT security company or IT professional company. So those are two of the most interesting sets of results that came out of this result, of this scan.
Yeah, it's really striking looking through some of the charts and graphs that you include in the report that, you know, in many of them, things sort of move along and you see, some different different verticals have different numbers. But then you get to restaurant bars and food services and it's like, kabam. I mean, it is stark how much they stand out compared to other industries.
Yeah. I mean, two things for me, as I said, is that the pandemic's moved them into being kind of either you become digitized or you die, unfortunately. I think maybe that's a bit harsh to say, but if you think about it, with the need of social distancing and certainly lockdowns in certain parts of the world, that made a lot of sense to be able to get technology online and operative for them. And the second part is, as I said, they're not security-focused specialists. They just want to have a function. So it doesn't surprise me to see those things spiraling up, but without the thought of, I need to lock this down, restrict access, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, so what are the takeaways from this report? When you look at all the information that you gathered here, what are the lessons learned?
I think the key thing is visibility allows you to be informed, and being informed allows you to take action. And a lot of our companies and customers we've worked with here, who we've performed the scans with, were not aware of these things. So awareness starts with visibility, of course, and then they need to move into taking action to be decisive about that. So I'd say, number one, really we need to be aware of what's going on. Second thing is we need to consider the way in which we're going to move forward. And if you go back to the phrasing of zero trust and all the funky buzziness around that, the thing I like to call it the most around that is it's about providing access to only those who are authorized to get access. Everything else is dark, it's gone, it shouldn't be there. But to get to that point and understanding who should get access to what, we need to look at what these enterprises have. So take the visibility, understand what you have, and then ask the question, does the entirety of the internet need access to this service? If the answer is no, then you already have a good path forward to go and segment that off, protect it, isolate it, move it behind a different control set. If the answer is yes, of course, you have to address with different sets of controls. But that segmentation and understanding that you should not have all these services available to the entirety of the internet is a pretty big step forward. So I think those two things are critical: visibility, then segmentation, isolation. And the third is, as I said, take action and remove, utilize platforms, foundations like Zero Trust to remove access, remove that attack surface. That would be my three main steps to call out.
When you're working with the folks that you work with your customers, I mean, do they know what they don't know? Is there an awareness that they have these sorts of exposures, or is that a bit of an eye-opener for them?
There's no real black and white answer to that, Dave. I think there's a bit of everybody and in between. And it's, again, it depends on how mature they are as an organization in their security landscape. We see everything in between. And I think the key thing here about all of this is not to point a finger at somebody and say, you've done something wrong. Because nobody's put a service on the internet maliciously. I mean, not really. That's never really going to happen. What is happening is someone's putting the service on the internet to empower the business. And they probably don't understand the implications of that. So when we do point this out to them and we do have that conversation with them, it's about understanding that it's a visible point. You're seeing a snapshot in time. No one's done anything wrong, but let's take this and let's try and find a path to make things better. Not say you've done something wrong or you don't have visibility or you should have seen this and you didn't, it's very ignorant of you. No. It's really to say, be aware so you have that intelligence so you can go and make those decisions, whatever that decision may be for your business.
Our thanks to Nathan Howe from Zscaler for joining us. The report is titled Exposed. We'll have a link in the show notes. The CyberWire Research Saturday is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of DataTribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabe, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.